chapter 5, not really the middle of chapter 5, we had learned the beautiful song, the mashal, or Shira Nali Yedidi, Shiraz Dodi Likamo, Kerem Hoyoli Yedidi, the Kerem Ben Shaman, where Yeshayahu sings for his friend who is God about the vineyard, and he did everything that he could for the vineyard, and he had hoped that it would make beautiful grapes, but it didn't make beautiful grapes, but it turned out to be a terrible disappointment to him. And then he finally tells them that you are the make you spoil, you are my vineyard. I did so much, I protected you. I took you out of Mitzrayim, I protected you with the clouds of glory. I did whatever I could, I brought you to Eretz Yisrael. I protected you, I gave you strength, I gave you courage. And there was no response. Take a look at Pasuk Zion 7 in chapter 5. Ki kerem Hashem tzvakot beit Yisrael. The vineyard of the God of hosts is the house of Israel. The Yehuda netah sha'ashua, and the people of Yehuda are the plant of his joy. Sha'ashua,
delight.
Lulei toratcha sha'ashuai. Yes, it is in Tehillim. I just wanted to give another passage where the word sha'ashua is used. And it means im yelet shashuim. Very good. So you know what we have now? The word shashua. The word shashua describes the relationship between God and the Jewish people. It describes how we feel about Torah. Lulei toratcha shashua ozavadati bani. Shashua, delight, is a very nice, I think it's a nice word. But there's something about shashua that's a little bit close to tsa'atsu'a. But tsa'atsu'a would be going too far. You know, when Clinton said he has a new toy. You know, toys, it seems new toys don't last too long. That was a terrible statement, by the way. It was a terrible statement of Clinton. When Barack was elected, he says he has a new toy. It was a terrible, terrible thing, even though I disliked it, Barack intensely, but it did terrible disrespect. Yeah, you're right. That's how it is. I never like, forgive me, remembering the 70s, the 80s, I'd be here at different conferences, and you know, the president of some great women's organization in the United States would get up and say, well, you know, Yitzhak, Shimon. Yitzhak Rabin is the prime minister of the state of Israel. Would you get up in the United States and talk about Bill, or in England about Tony? And this was this idea of, yes, no, so Shashua, there's a point that I want to make. I'm not starting talking politics or Tzatzua. You know, Tzatzua is already taking Sha'ashua a one step further, which already does not describe the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people. A Sha'ashua is something that gives great joy and delight. And he had hoped that there would be justice, and what happens is mispach, an outbreak of an illness of the soul. L'tzedakah, he hoped that there would be tzedakah, and v'hine, and behold, there is tzedakah. And we pointed out the poetic terminology that's used over here. Now the words mishpat and tzedakah are going to be used again later. Mishpat usually represents the relationship between man and fellow man. Tzedakah can include as well the relationship between man and God. We're talking about justice and righteousness. Tzedakah, and I think we pointed this out last year or 2 years ago, we make the mistake because we've gotten used to the idea that, you know, tzedakah counts on your mothers, you know, that giving money, tzedakah, is charity. Charity is not the real translation of tzedakah. When the Rebbeim says, when Moshe Rabbeinu says in Parsha Shoftim, tzedek, tzedek, tirdof. So what does he mean? That you should go around knocking on doors asking for money? Tzedek is righteousness. In other words, I'll take it one step further. While Mishpat would be the letter of the law, there is also the spirit of the law. And the spirit of the law already is that which the word Tzedakah says. Mishpat is justice. There's something harsh about Mishpat. And Tzedakah already tempers Mishpat so that Mishpat is something that is warm, concerned. I watch. What is fascinating about the Nevi'im is the following. They may talk in metaphors, and by the way, we'll have to notice this and watch this as it happens, but you see it throughout Tanakh. The metaphors are usually from nature or from wildlife. From the world of the animal world, they take it all from nature, just like Shir HaShirim is all the metaphors are taken from nature. Remember, Klal Yisrael was a people that lived on the land and with the land. So, you know, the idea of a vineyard is a muscle that would be understood by the Jewish people. But the Nevi'im always took the muscle and made it real. They didn't leave open the possibility that one would misunderstand or not get the point. So he comes to the point, and you're going to see one after another. He's telling them clearly what it is that God is upset with. Hoy magiye bayit v'bayit. Woe unto those who their houses touch upon other houses. And I will explain in a moment after I read a Rashi. Rashi says, Esrim u'shnayim ashrei nema b'sefer Tehillim. 22 times David HaMelech uses the word ashrei in Tehillim. El mekaymei ha-Torah. And he's talking about those who observe Torah. Ashrei, fortunate, happy. Tehillim begins with the word ashrei. Ashrei ha-ish. Ashalo halach batzas v'shoim. Ashrei yoshvei v'isecha. We're talking about 22 times David HaMelech uses the word ashrei about those who observe Torah. And there are 22 times that Yeshayahu says the word hoy. Oy vey, woe about the evil. Hoy, Rashi says, tzakat anacha, the cry of pain, al puranut ha'atidalavo, on punishment that will come upon them in the future. He already used the word hoy in the first parak. Chazon Yeshayahu ben Oiz, Asher Chosar Yehuda, Yishlon Bimei Yosem, Uzio Yosem Ochaz, Yosem Alta Yehuda, Shimu Shemayim Vazin Yeretz. I'm just trying to impress you, you know, Hashem Tiber. And then he says, Yod Asher Koineu Lechamor Eves Baalav Yisrael, Yod Ami Lai Yisrael. Hoi Goi Choyte Am Keved Avon Zera Mireim, Bonim Mashchisim, Nietzu, Es Kedosh Yisrael Nazoru Achor. I have to smile when I say that pasuk, which is of course a great attack on great attack on Klal Yisrael. Hoy goy choy tei, sinning people. It must have been about a year or two ago. I walk into a restaurant in Toronto, and from the back of the restaurant, I hear somebody saying, "Hoy goy choy tei, I'm Kevin Avon." Somebody who was my student in the yeshiva in Toronto about 35 years ago, he says, "Red." I still remember that concept. So Rashi says 22 times Yeshayahu uses the word hay, which is a cry of pain about the punishment that's going to come upon the Rishayim. And take a look at what it is. What are the hays about? Magiyei bayit b'bayit, sodeh v'sodeh yakrihu. Those who have houses touching houses, fields to fields, yakrivu, they bring close at Eves Bakom until there is no place. You know who's in the middle of the two houses? The poor, the weak, the exploited, and then the wealthy, the well-connected, the ones who have protector, find all sorts of ways to get that house out of the hands of the poor. Yes.
Actually,
you say the example,
but God said that the houses of the Jews, one didn't go into the other, but they stayed differently.
Matovu Yaakov, Mishkanotecha Yisrael.
So I'm thinking that
by the way, that's a very nice pshat. In other words, Sora here is saying her own pshat. Magie Bayit, the Bayit, I mean, it would do for a great B sermon and maybe even better than that. The idea that one house touches another house, in a sense, the idea of invasion of privacy. My house is invading your house. My field is invading your field. Very nice shot. I like that. It's not the truth, but it's good.
You're not elevating her to A?
No, it's good.
The rich can afford to live in big below, so there's nobody around to invade their privacy. But poor people have to live in their fields, of course.
All right, so you're following in the footsteps of Sarah. But the pshat is, it's not bad. I mean, really, it's not bad at all. But the pshat is, they always find a way to squeeze the poor out. In its broader terms, we're talking about exploitation of the weak. Exploitation of the weak. And it's going on all the time. They bring one field next to the other at Efes Makom, until there's no place left for the poor. There will be apartments for all, but there won't be an apartment or a piece of land for the poor.
Rashi says in the continuation that it's the rich that they are. Houses touch each other.
That's
by
right.
By squeezing out.
That's exactly what I'm saying. The buy it. Yes, are the rich on both sides who squeeze the poor out so that they are left alone.
So now they touch each other.
But I say, in terms of what Yeshayahu is saying, all exploitation, all ways in which the little guy, the one who's not well connected, is the one who always loses out. In other words, the one who cannot afford the battery of top lawyers to plead his case, and therefore he falls victim to a system that's cruel, a system which is mishpat but not tzedakah. And here, like the way Rashi learns it, v'hu shachtem levadchem bekeref haaretz, do you think you're going to live alone in the midst of the land? You think it's all going to be yours? You're going to get rid of the poor? And you, who shaftem levatchem, you alone are going to be established, and you're going to live in this land. So I want to tell you a secret. Ba'oznoi, after now to read this, Ba'oznoi, in my ears, you know what I heard in my ears? Hashem Tzvakot, the words of the God of hosts. Imlo batim rabim l'shama yihyu, those big, beautiful houses with which that you use to squeeze out the poor. Many houses with Shamayu will be desolate. Gedolim v'tovim, big and good houses that will end up me'ein yoshev, without anybody inhabiting them. You're going to go into Golos. What do you think? You think forever? You're going to injustice is going to reign forever, and injustice is going to be tolerated by the Rabbeinu Shalom. Ultimately, evil returns upon its perpetrators to destroy them, and the ill-gotten gains are in the longer view of history are all lost. So in Pasuk 9, he talked about what's going to happen to the big houses, and now you know what's going to happen to the fields. You think you've stolen fields, and therefore it's yours, and you're going to enjoy it. Ki aseret tzindei kerem ya'asu bat echat. Aseret tzindei kerem. Rashi says that tzindei kerem are a pair of animals that go and plow a field. 10 tzindei kerem, 10, can, let's say, plowed during the course of one day a field of some size or other that should bring in a lot of produce, and you know what they're going to make? It will make bat echad. Bat echad really is a measure which represents a tenth of what the field should have made. A tenth of what the field should have made. And the same thing is true further. V'zera chomer, seed, that should be used over a chomer, a large area field, yaseh eifa, it's going to make a measure that's an eifa. The bat and the eifa are small measures. One-tenth, the eifa is one-tenth of the chomer, and the bat is one-tenth of the simde kerem, which means that here, you think that you're going to steal the field and therefore you're going to be wealthy. There's always justice. That's the first hay. The first hay is therefore talking about the exploitation of the poor, the weak, the underprivileged. Next, the poetry or the imagery of Yeshayahu is amazing. Hoymash Kimei Babeka, woe to those who get up in the morning, and early in the morning already, Sheikhor Yirdofu, they pursue intoxicating beverages. Ma'acharei Baneshef, they stay up late at night. Now you see the word Neshef is also used as a party because it's something that takes place in the evening. Yayin Yadli Kain, they are burning with wine, or wine causes them to burn. Yes?
When somebody is overly happy from drink, they say he's lit up.
He's lit up. That's right. He lights up like a Christmas tree. What am I going to do with that? You know? It ignites them. Well, you know, the red nose.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about the red cheeks, red nose, not the... Who's the red-nosed reindeer? Now he's talking about a personal and private pursuit of pleasure. In the first hay, we were talking about exploitation of others. Now we're talking about man who destroys himself. I mean, you can put in drugs for Yayin and Sheikha, you put in drugs. And they're living the life of merriment. Their parties are with the kinor is the harp, the navel is probably a violin. In other words, they're both string instruments.
Today they have the opposite meaning.
The kinor is the violin. The kinor is the violin, and the navel is the harp. Why did I say that? Because you see, because Rashi says that maybe you're right. Which has more strings? The harp has more strings. Also, Rashi says the navel has more strings than the kinar. So therefore, the navel is the harp. So I was wrong.
No, but it's interesting when you talk about kinar David.
Kinar David.
And
really it was navel David.
Yeah.
But the fact is that in Tilim he uses... What's that song? You know, we only know Tilim. Some know, people know Tilim because they say it. Some know Tilim because there are a few songs. Ura Hashacha HaNevel V'chinor. Nevel V'chinor. There it's Nevel V'chinor. Nevel really is what David played. Tof, the drum, the Khalil, and the flute. V'yayin and wine mishteim at their parties. And therefore they're so wrapped up in themselves, they are so lost in themselves that Poel Hashem lo yabitu, they don't look at that which God has done, umaseh yodav lo ro'u, and they don't see the act of God. They cannot see God. Rashi, interestingly enough, says et Poel Hashem lo yabitu ubo raito da Hashem lo istakalu. He gets it from Targum Yonatan Ben Uziel. Paul Hashem, what God wrought is Torah, and if they don't look into Torah, that means that Paul Hashem lo yabitu, they don't look at it. And then Rashi says on Umaseyadav lo ro, also atzrom ki lo ro et gurutav. They made themselves like they didn't see God's greatness. Davaracha. Rashi says Davaracha. Lo kilsuhu shacharit yotzer or v'lo arvit hamariv aravim. Paul Hashem and Ma'aseh Yadav is the creation of the world. And therefore it means morning and evening. In the morning we're supposed to say Yotzer Or, God is the one who creates the light. Yotzer Or Uvorei Choshech Oseh Shalom Uvorei Tzachol Yotzer Hamaorot. And at night we're supposed to say Ma'ariv Aravim. So Rashi brings on the Medrash at Paul Hashem Lo Yabitu, they don't see the that which God did. Umaisa Yotav Lo Ro means that they do not recognize the awesome act of creation. Yes, Sarah.
Are they supposed to use in the Beit HaMikdash? In other words, that they take something that was, should have brought...
That's nice.
...of what went on in the music, and they use it for all kinds of...
matters of... use the holy in a profane manner.
Right.
That here's the kinar, the navel, these, and Tofer Halil were all used in the Beit HaMikdash, and they do it now, this... their personal parties, Yayin Shtey, yes.
Not seeing what Kadosh Baruch Hu created, isn't that more than just the fact of not seeing but not recognizing a occurrence of that? I mean, the whole idea...
I think that's exactly what Rashi wants when Rashi says, Osu Atzvam, they made themselves as though they don't see, because they don't want to be beholden. They don't want to owe a debt of gratitude to the Rebbein Shem, because if you know what he does for you, then of course that places a tremendous responsibility upon you. You have to act in a particular way. You can't simply do whatever you want when you know that your very being and a whole world is all the act of God. They don't want to see. They don't want to be bothered. That's why the yayin and the sheikha, you understand, is to wipes it all out. That's all. I don't want to be beholden. I don't want to be indebted. In general, we find ourselves difficult to be indebted to to people. All right, but with that, that's it. Another story. Lachain, therefore, Gola Amini B'lidat. My people has gone into exile because of a lack of knowledge, because they don't know reality. Now, every so often one has to point this out. He could be saying the Golah Ami Mik Golah. He's speaking to Yudav Yerushalayim. They haven't gone into exile. So there are one of two possibilities. He's using the past tense when he's speaking to Jews in Yerushalayim. It may very well be after the 10 tribes have been taken into exile, and therefore he's talking Golah Ami, my people went into exile, Mi Blidat. Or it could also always mean the following. The Navi already has seen the event to come in his mind's prophetic eye. He can talk about a future event in past tense because he already saw it. So therefore he can say, Lachain, therefore, Golo Ami, my people went into exile, Mi Blidat, because they didn't have the knowledge of God. Uchvoto, and the glory of my nation, its people, it's mighty, it's strong, are Metei Ra'av, people of hunger. V'hamono, and the masses of people, Tzichei Tzoma, are dry with thirst. That's always the picture of Golos. The picture of Golos is, you know, walking out of Anatefka, running out of water, not enough food, trying to pick up pieces of food. And these are the people who exploited the poor, who stole their homes and their land from them. Lachain, therefore, Hirchiva Sha'ol Nafsha, the very grave has spread out its soul. In other words, it's leaving the impression or creating the picture of the grave that is opening up wide. Ufa'arofiha Litli Kok, and has opened its mouth with no end, an endless pit before them. The Yorad Hadora the Hamona Usha'ona for Alezva, and down into that pit will go the beauty, the masses. Hadora is the beauty. Hamona the Hamon Am, the masses of people. Usha'ona, there are the sounds of a city. There are the sounds of life. You know, you hear, yes, it gets you on your nerves, but you know, you hear honking and you hear people talking and you hear telephones going off. I mean, this cacophony of life, that's the sha'ona, the noise of the city. We may not like it when we hear it, but to be left in absolute silence without it, is terrible. There's something so full of life about the sounds of a city, va'aleiz ba, and all of those who are full of joy, alizim, of those full of joy, happiness, you know, happy-go-lucky people. All of this is going to be swept down into the pit. Vayishach Adam, Vayishvalish. This is a pasuk that had been said earlier as well. We're talking about how the mighty have fallen. Vayishach Adam. Adam is lowered. Vayishvalish, and man is brought down. Ve'enei Gevohim, and the eyes of the mighty or the haughty, Tishpalna, are going to be brought down. This has been a theme of Yeshayahu's. You know? Ani nifcharti aladereham, yeshli mandat, ani anavet, ani achlit. You know, there's a certain sense of I and I alone, which of course is the problem of our four prime ministers, the previous one who will be the next one, the present one who's not going to be the next one. You know, a sense of the one in back of me. No, we're talking about the one in back of me. We have to get him out of the back of me. I feel him looking over my shoulder. The haughtiness, as though nobody else counts and nobody else matters. And nobody else has an opinion, and nobody else is really important. I know what's best for the people. That's the Einei Gevoim Tishpalna. Vayigba Hashem Tzvakot Bamishvad Vahakel HaKadosh Nidash Vitzvaka. This pasuk is the pasuk that we say before HaMelech HaKadosh on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Now there is one part. There are two parts of this pasuk that we had two, three shurim on last year, where we differentiated between Hashem Tzvakot, the description of God as the God of hosts, and God who is described as Hakel HaKadosh. And I'm not going to go through that shir again. Basically, we had defined and proved beyond any shadow of a doubt that Hashem Tzvakot means the God who is stern, who is strong, who is a man of war, who brings justice to bear, the one who created and brought into being the entire cosmos. There's something strong, mighty, powerful, even to the point of punishing, about the God of hosts. The Hakel HaKadosh, a term that nearly exclusively appears in Sefer Yeshayahu and a number of times in Tehillim. Hakel HaKadosh always represents the God who is warm, who is close, who is involved, always in connection with the Jewish people, the one who is there ready and willing to bring aid and assistance and succor to the people of Israel. So therefore it's correct how the pasuk says, Hashem Tzvakot rises in what? Bamishpat. Mishpat is harsh. Mishpat is strong. Mishpat is the letter of the law. V'hakel HaKadosh, the soft, the mellow, the loving, Hakel HaKadosh Migdash, through what is he sanctified? Through Tzedakah, righteousness. In other words, as we pointed out, didn't it say at the beginning? What was the end of the muscle? The end of the muscle was Vayikav L'mishpat V'hinei Mispach L'Tzedakah V'hinei Tzedakah. Mishpat and Tzedakah were the two words that were used there to say what it is that God finds wrong with the Jewish people. There's no mishpat, there's no tzedakah. Instead of mishpat, there's mishpach. Instead of tzedakah, there's tzedakah. And vayigba Hashem tzedakot. Now the end of this section is vayigba Hashem tzedakot. God rises in mishpat. And this is a theme also that appears in Chazal often. That when punishment comes upon the evil, God's might rises in the world. As long as evil exists, people will always ask the question, why? Why do the evil prosper? Why do the evil have the power to do what they are doing to us? But when evil is punished, then God rises through that mishpat. V'hakel HaKadosh, and the God of sanctity, the one who is warm and close, Nigdash B'Tzedakah, his sanctity comes through the charity, the tempers, mishpat.
Could it be that it refers to the Kenila Shurakadim, like the Zakat portion of the Mishpat?
I don't know. I wouldn't say so. I don't know. I wanted to say one other thing. If you want to take the two parts of this pasuk, the first part is Malkeinu, and the second is Avinu. The two faces of the Rebbeinu Shlomo. Hashem Tzakot of Mishpat, that's Melech. And the Kel HaKadosh, who's Nigdash B'Tzedakah, that is Avinu. One represents the might and the fist. And by the way, in the word of Hashem Tzvakot, in Perek, it's either Yud Gimel or Yud Dalet. In Yud Gimel or Yud Dalet, where Hashem is described, Hashem Mefaked Tzva Milcha. I found it. I can't believe it. Chapter Yud Gimel. Pasuk 4. The Navi here is in a, well, in general, in chapter 13, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, the Navi is describing how the nations of the world are going to come against Babel. Babel was one of the cruelest rulers of the time, and a world is going to gang up against Babel. And it says, Kol Hemon Behadim, the sound of the masses upon the mountain, Dumut Amrav. It looks like a great number of people. And others. You can imagine a mighty army coming against Babel. Kol Sha'on, the great sounds of Mamlechot Goyim Ne'asofim, the kingdoms of nations all gathering. A coalition of nations, in Bushian terminology, there's Bush the Elder. A coalition of people coming, and by the way, that coalition of nations went against ancient Babel. Right? Iraq, right? That the coalition, Hashem Tzakot, the God of hosts, Mifakeid Tzva Milchama. He is the commander-in-chief of the army of the war. Shem Tzvakot has in it the word Tzava. So Shem Tzvakot represents the idea of Hashem, who's strong, who's mighty, who's powerful. And on the other hand, so that's Malkeinu. And Avinu is Kel HaKadosh. Yud Zayin. Oh boy, you know, I love covering ground. I like it. V'ro Chavasim Kedavram. By the way, this is not a topic for now, but at some point we will have to discuss it. Rashi, in different places in Tanakh, gives different definitions or translations for the word mishpat. Because the word mishpat can mean the idea of justice. Mishpat can also mean carrying out justice, the decision of a court. It can also mean the punishment that is meted out. Mishpat is a word that has a lot of meanings. They're all interrelated, but a lot of meanings. Over here, Rashi says, "Vayigvah Hashem tzvakot b'mishpat kishayaseh mishpatim b'hem." When God is going to do justice in them against the evil, yigvah shmo ba'olam, his name becomes great in the world. B'mishpat. So Rashi says, Yushtitza Balaz. In old French, it's Yushtitza. I think that sounds a little bit
justice.
Like, I don't know too much old French, but I think that over here we can all be.
It sounds more Latin.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it could have been that old French was pretty much a Latin scholar over there. It was. What? They were related, Baylor?
Yes, they were. So French is a Latin language.
French comes from Latin. Okay, no, so they're
Justicia in Spanish. and justice in English.
Oh, what, how do you say it in Spanish?
Justicia.
Justicia. Because a J is like a junta. Okay. Very good. Now, another one of the images that you'll see in a number of places in Tanakh, one of the pictures. Destruction is always followed by the animal kingdom comes in and takes over. V'ro'u chavosim kedavram, sheep are going to graze kedavram as is their custom, as is their want. Rashi says, V'ro'u chavosim kedavram, Rashi is taking us from the image to the what it represents. The sheep are the tzaddikim. So Yustitsa is going to come against the Bishoyim. But isn't there something very peaceful about Shepsalach that are grazing as they normally do? There's something very peaceful about it. So the peaceful part is that tzaddikim hanim sholim ke'eder harachelim, tzaddikim that are likened to a flock of sheep. Kedavram means kimin hagam. They will continue to graze as they usually do. Biyosher ubemida michalkalim divrehen bemishpat kikvasim halalu. They're going to do things right and in proper measure. Their words will be measured in justice, like Shepsalach verabuteinu darshu kedavram kimidubar bam nechamot hanidbarot lehem. Kedavram, Chazal learned Kedavram means as was said about them. Because there are two parts to say for Yeshayahu. There is the part of Pur'onut, punishment, and then there is the part of Nechama, consolation. That while there will be Mishpat to the Rishoyim, there will be Nechama to the Tzadikim. V'chorvot Mechim, Chorvot. The homes of the Rishoyim are referred to here as Chorvot, the ruins of Mechin. Mechin means the fat ones, the ones who've become wealthy off the fat of the land. The Chorvot Mechin, Gorim Yolchel. Gorim are little young lions. Gur Aryeh Yehuda. Who are the Gorim over here? The Gorim are the Tzaddikim. They are going to eat and consume. In other words, you thought you're going to build big houses. And you're going to take away lands at the expense of the poor and you're going to exploit them. The end is precisely the opposite is going to happen. You're not going to have it, but they are going to enjoy those benefits. Hi, another woe. Moshe ha'avon b'chavlei hashav v'cha'avot ha'agala chata'a. The first hoy was one that spoke about the evil that man does to fellow man. That was the hoy that began with that was the hoy magiei bayit the bayit. That was pasuk chet. The second hoy mashkinei barboker sheche yidofu is talking about those who have intellectually gone all wrong. They can't see Po'al Hashem. They can't see what the Rebbeinu Shalom said. They don't want to see what the Rebbeinu Shalom did. The third Hai is going to talk about the evil that a person does to himself, both intellectually and otherwise. Watch. Hai Moshe Ha'avon B'chavlei Hashav. Rashi is going to give the pshat of Chazal, but there is going to be an interesting amalgam over here. Moshe Ha'avon means those who draw sin b'chavlei hashav, with ropes that are nothing. V'cha'avot ha'agala, avot agala are the heavy, thick ropes of a carriage. It means the following. A chevel is a rope. Well, you know a rope. Okay, a rope. We're talking about not a thread. We're talking about a rope. But it's not the strongest rope of all, but then there are the ropes that hold an animal to a chariot or to a coach. Those are already not simply chevel, chavalim, which are ropes. Those are avot argala. Avot represents something that's very thick, very thick. So Rashi explains that that's the way of the Yetzirah. A man brings the Yetzirah upon himself by, you know, little avot argalah. But what he doesn't realize is those little avot argalah are going to become, in the course of time, something that is going to pull him. In other words, he's drawn with thin ropes, but oh, ultimately it's going to become the ropes that hold an animal to a coach. Rashi says, in the first half of the pasuk we're talking about chevel. In the second part of the pasuk we're talking about avot agala. In the first part of the pasuk we're talking about avon. And in the second part, katar, avon means something that the person does intentionally. But it's going to bring along all sorts of other chatoyim. Ultimately, he's going to make all sorts of mistakes and commit all sorts of other sins. Rashi says the following. Goaded in Yetzer Hara aleim, they bring the Yetzer Hara upon them, ma'at ma'at, little by little. Bitchila, at first, it's v'chavle hashav. Ropes that are nothing. And he gives an example. What's a rope that's nothing? Kechut shel kurei achavish. Like the
spider web.
It's small. One of the things of earth. A little avera lever. But once he is already aroused by the avera, midgaber v'holeich, it gets stronger and goes ad shenase kavot agala until it becomes like the ropes of a coach. She coached in boet hakaron limshoch. One that he says the coach is attached to the animals with the avot agala. Hashav, Rashi says, is dover shein bo mamish. Shav is nothing. You know, it really means. I would say that chavlei hashav is a bit of an oxymoron. Chevel represents, you know, a chevel. Chevel is a rope. You know, people can climb on ropes. How did Rachav let the miraglin that Yehoshua sent, chavalim? They had to bring Yirmiyahu out of the pit. They sent down chavalim so that he should come up. But chavle hashav, shav is the precise opposite of chevel. It's a nothing. It's no more than the web of a spider. One chut of the web of a spider. The Malbim says the following. We just read a little bit of the. You'll see why it's important. He basically says the following. Man cannot sin and enjoy sin unless he is able to justify it. In other words, a chote really needs some kind of a. It's just simply not terribly enjoyable to go ahead and do an avera when you are fully cognizant of the fact that there is a Rabbeinu Shel Olam and this is aser and you shouldn't be doing it, and you know that afterwards you're going to have all sorts of, you're going to have a guilty conscience and it's going to bother you and it just wasn't worth it. But what happens if one is able to intellectualize, maybe even put together a few good slogans,
rationale.
That's it, to rationalize it and to justify it to himself. The justification or the rationalization is an intellectual undertaking. The avera is a physical or an emotional one. So the Malbim says, those who draw themselves to sin, do you know what they need? They need the rope that's going to draw them, which is really nothing. You know what's really nothing? Their intellectual justification is nonsense. They create something. They create the slogans. the sisvaot. And therefore, on the basis of that, you know, just as long as you can throw out the sisma, ein pitaron tzva'i, there is no military solution to the problem. Ein alternativa, right? Okay. Arafat yimach shemay v'zikroi hu ha-partner. You just get a bunch of slogans. Oh, did you read the Wall Street Journal editorial yesterday? What a powerful editorial. I just remember the last sentence. The last sentence was, never surrender is a much more powerful slogan than peace now. Slogans! Peace now has become a slogan. I, peace now, can be a destructive slogan, but you have a justification. In other words, you have a shita. My shita is, it can't go on like this. English lot al amacher. Can't rule over another people. And these are all great slogans, and people can live with them and can mouth them, but maybe it makes no sense. Maybe it's not true. Maybe it's no more than an illusion that you want to believe in, and the truth. Bashetach is not so. So I believe you'd love to have shalom, but it's not possible. Not possible. I wanted to win the lottery and I didn't, you know, so I didn't win the lottery. That's also somebody else won it. Maybe in another generation, in another Gilgal, I'll win it. So the Malbim says there are two parts to the pasuk: the chavlei hashav, the ropes that are nothing, is the intellectual justification and underpinning of sin. The slogans, the ideas that seem to turn sin into something not only acceptable, but something that's absolutely admirable. Admirable. And then the avot ha'agala chata, the person who is caught in the web, I like that, caught in the web of the nonsensical ideas, he's going to have to sin. He's going to have to sin afterwards. But what's important, according to the Malbim, is to put first things first. It's not the hate that leads to the avon. It's the intellectual avon that brings the hate. You create the shita, you create the Weltanschauung, that's a fancy word, you know. Because nobody just does averes because they like averes. Everybody does things because I believe this to be true, absolutely true. And I think that the Malbim was pashut reacting or responding to people whom he saw in his generation. He was one of the big fighters against reform. Oy, did they cause him troubles all over Europe? But he, first of all, by his very perush on Tanakh, he shattered so much of what was accepted in the non-religious world, because he made it clear that every word in Tanakh is absolutely necessary. And you know, he opened up the Tanakh to Klal Yisrael. Yes.
Rabbi Lutz gave those of example. I don't know who he took it from, but how, so someone wants to do a very, doesn't want to choose one mitzvah, you know, like seven stages of what a person goes through, that by not wanting to do one mitzvah, he ends up being called there by cold. Where he says that this mitzvah is not important, it's not this or that, and he ends up being called there by cold. And it starts, and there's a whole series of things.
That's exactly, that's really what the Malbim is saying over here. There's a whole intellectual process. Without the intellectual process, it couldn't be. Ha'omrim. And then they reach a further stage. They reach the stage at which these psukim are going to be beautiful. Ha'omrim, they say, Yemayah, let him hurry. Yachisha ma'aseyu, let him make things quick. Leman nida. Now, so let's see, you know? Because here the Navi has said that all sorts of things are going to happen, that they openly challenge God. Go ahead, hurry! Hey, go ahead, let's see. So we should see the Tikrav, and come close, the Tavoa, and it should come, Atzas Kedosh Yisrael, the council of the Holy One of Israel, the Nedar. Yeah, let's know. You know, sort of the open challenge to the Rabbeinu Shalelam. Hoi, this is a pasuk that mamash, we have to learn it Baal Peh. The next step in the intellectual process, the first part of the intellectual process is a shita.
a philosophy. And from the Shita and the philosophy comes already a heter, a permission to do Aveda. But it goes further than that. Ha'omdim l'ra tov v'la tov ra. It can reach the absurd point that about good they say, about bad they say good, v'la tov ra, and that which is good they say is bad. Somim choshech l'or, they turn darkness into light, v'or, and that which is light they turn into choshech. In other words, Tumigidin are living in the dark ages. Who are the enlightened? Miloshin light? Are the ones who have rejected all of Torah. Samim choshen chaor, v'or lachoshech. Samim mar lematok. They make that which is bitter, or that's sweet. Umatok lemar, and that which is really matok, they turn into mar. Wait, what we can do with this pasuk? What you thank you? What we can do with this pasuk? It's unbelievable. In other words, the you reach the point not only where you have justified the chait, but no, the chait becomes good. That's the definition of good. And what is good? Torah and mitzvahs, bad. The filth of the world, that's good. I think that's what our problem is. I know that's my problem. When I read certain articles, I'm struck with such consternation. How could the man say that? You hear people talking on TV and on the, we're light years away. How can they? What they're really doing is saying, not only saying that what's good is bad and what's bad is good. What's dark is light. What's light is dark. What's bitter is sweet and what's sweet is bitter. It's unbelievable. That's the point at which one reaches. What you need is, it begins, of course, with what may seem at first to be an innocuous, not too serious kind of deviation from normal thinking, but ultimately it ends up to a complete olam hafuch ani roeh. I see before myself a completely topsy-turvy, a world turned upon itself. World turned upon itself. Yeah, I was thinking this, you know, every time, of course, they have Yossi Palin on. My blood boils. So he made, he commented on, you know, about Netanyahu. Netanyahu, a man, well, legally, yes, he was not indicted, but Mibchinam Musarit, how can you have a man who's, you know, he describes him come out like a jailbird, you understand, like, everybody is looking at him and thinking to themselves, what are you talking about? Five people in the Prime Minister's office have refused to testify about the answer questions about the campaign Amutot, you understand? And then there are those who are saying that let's bring Barak has to be brought in and, you know, over a silly thing, they had Netanyahu and his wife hours, days, weeks on end interrogated. Bisoyin Gadol made sure that that TV knew before Netanyahu knew that they're coming to his house. I mean, do they think we're crazy? And here, the people closest to Barak, his brother-in-law, you know, it's a whole Chever Ganovin who most probably illegally funneled hundreds of millions of shekels into the campaign and nobody wants to answer questions. And this is the height of, this is morality. By the way, I remember 4 days before the election, there was a meeting of Rabbanim with Netanyahu, and he said then, because there were those who knew a few days before the election that there's so much money coming in from all sorts of sources, and he alluded to it, that we're going to have a lot of difficulty because we're up against a tremendous amount of money that's being poured in. Immoralities. So what did he do? He turns Tov into Ra and Ra into Tov. They're always doing it. Yes.
Well, a perfect example, Yael Dayan said that you're preventing abortions from trafficking and feeding.
Wait, that's perfect. Perfect! The best example. I saw it yesterday or 2 days ago in the paper. In other words, organizations
Oh, I wonder if Rabbi Gordon knows about it. An organization like Nefesh Achad B'Yisrael that tries to assist a pregnant woman who's pregnant, that she should go through her pregnancy and not abort, and either keep the child or give the child out for adoption. Or there are others. There's Machon Puan. There's Efrat. You know, all of these. So Ya'el Dayan says any attempt to assist a woman to go through a pregnancy is trafficking in fetuses. Do you understand? It's almost the best example of Ra is Tov and Tov is Ra. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Hitler knew what to do with Jewish fetuses.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now it's Ya'el Dayan. So, unfortunately, we have no difficulty understanding the psukim in Yeshayahu. Hoy, chachomim beinehem, oh, this I love. V'neged p'neihem nevonim. This is a continuation, of course, of the theme as we've seen it from the beginning. The haughty and the conceited. Woe to those who are wise in their own eyes. V'neged p'neihem, and before their faces they see themselves as the intellectuals, the intelligent one. They don't understand. They simply don't understand. They think that all wisdom belongs to them. They know what's best for the people. They know what's best. Hoy, gibodim lishtos yayin. They are gibodim, they are mighty to drink wine. Va'anshei chayil, and they are men of valor. Limsoch shechar, to mix. Limsoch shechar means to mix intoxicating beverages. You know, they used to mix it. They'd mix it with water and to prepare it. Or maybe Limsoch Shecha, because the guy knows, I don't know, make a Bloody Mary or something or other, but that's the only name I know of. A cocktail. How's that to make a cocktail? Wait, the next pasuk. Matzdike Rosha Ekev Shochad. I feel that Yeshayahu today should be standing someplace in Kikar Tzion. Matzdike Rosha. They find the Rosha innocent, Ekev Shochad, because of graft, v'tzidkat tzadikim, and the righteousness of the righteous, that they are innocent, yosidu mimenu, they remove his innocence from him.
This is for the judges again.
It's for the judges, and it's for the media.
Yeah.
There are those, I mean, in so many cases, there are those who are pushed guilty before they're guilty until proven innocent. That's not what's supposed to happen in a democratic society. A man is innocent until proven guilty. Make a cheshbon of all the people who've been taken through the nativ hayisuchim, the suffering of years, because they were accused and then indicted for crimes, and the end was that they were found absolutely innocent. And people who are in high position and had to lose their positions because of it. What are you talking about? Yaakov Neman, you remember Yaakov Neman? Ehud Olmert, I mean, I don't remember the names of all of the Rashei Arim and others who were indicted and had to be dragged for years through the courts. I mean, it's a terrible, terrible system. There's something wrong with the system. I think the percentages are such that a very, very high percentage of people in high places who are indicted are found guilty. And you may never find out that they were found innocent. It may be, you know, someplace on page 12. Matzdikei Rosha, Ekev Shochad. The Rosha is found innocent because of graft. I tell you, I'm so confused already. I don't even know anymore who's Tov and who's Ra. I don't know if Nimrodi is good or Nimrodi is bad. I don't like his name, but I don't have a clue anymore. I'm so confused. I don't know how anybody's ever going to find out. I don't know. I don't know anymore. The tzidkas tzadikim, and the righteousness of the tzadikim, yasiru mimenu. They remove his reputation. You destroy a man's reputation. You grind it into the dust. Well, unfortunately, this Yeshayahu is... Now listen to the beautiful pasuk, powerful painful pasuk. Lachain, therefore, ke'echol kash lishon eish. As straw is eaten by a tongue of fire. The word achila is used not only in terms of eating, but consuming. Shvalcham vaschal agayim, ashelo yedocha, v'amam lachos, ashadishinchot, lo karo ki ochlu es Yaakov, v'es nozeyu heishamu. They've eaten, they've consumed Yaakov. Now can you imagine when a tongue of fire touches dry straw, it's going to burn so quickly. So therefore he says, Lachin, therefore, ke'echol kash, as straw is eaten and consumed by a tongue of fire. The chashash lehavo yirpeh. Chashash is like chaff or bran. Lehavo, a flame yirpeh will sort of weaken it and just about melt it. You know what's going to happen to the evil? Shorshon kamak yihyeh. Their root will be like something which disintegrates. Upircham ka'avok yale. Their flower is going to go up like dust. You know why? Ki ma'asu et Torah Hashem sakot. Because they rejected, they despised the Torah of the God of Hosts. That imrat kedosh Yisrael ni'etsu. And they rejected the words of the Holy One of Israel. By the way, here in this pasuk, do you see the difference about how Hashem Tzvakot is used and how Kadosh Yisrael is used? First of all, the fact that you have imrat, the word amar is always a soft word. There is ledaber and there's lemor or lomar. Amida ko tomar lebet Yaakov v'tageg levnei Israel. Amida always is something soft. There's something, you know, real. Torah is horah, law, what you shall do, what you shall not do. Because they have rejected Torah, the law of Hashem Tzakot, the God of Hosts, that Imrat Kadosh Yisrael, and that which was said by the Holy One of Israel, Ni Eitzu, they have rejected. Al Kain, therefore, Choroaf Hashem Ta'amah, therefore, the anger of God has burned against his people, Vayed Yado Alav, Vayakehu, and he inclined his hand upon him, and he smote him, Vayirigizu Ha'adim, and the mountains trembled, Vatihi Nivlatam Kesucha B'Kerev Kutzot, and their bodies were like dirt in the streets, and the Cholzot, despite the fact that he has brought this kind of punishment, Lo Shav Apo, his anger has not turned back, Va'od Yado Netuya, and his hand is still outstretched. This is going to be repeated a number of times, like a refrain, a terrible refrain. The Nasan Neis Lagoyim Eidachol, God is going to lift a banner to the nations distant, out in the far, and the banner is going to be to call them to battle against Eretz Yisrael, the Sharak Lo Mikitzei Haaretz, and he's going to whistle to him from the ends of the earth. V'hinei Meheron, behold the enemy. Watch a description that's going to come now. V'hinei and behold, and this is going to be one of a number of descriptions in the next few prakim of how swiftly and how efficiently the enemy comes when HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls him. V'hinei Meheron, quickly, kal, with ease, Yavo, he will come. Eino Yef, there's nobody exhausted amongst the enemy. Vein Koshelbo, there's nobody who stumbles. Lo Yonum, this is the most frightening thing. Do you know how he describes the enemy? In a description of HaKadosh. Lo Yonum, he will not slumber, the Lo Yishon, and he will not sleep. Boy, that's terrible. In a sense, what it means is the enemy comes against Klal Yisrael when we are deserving, unfortunately, or unworthy. V'lo niftach ezor chalatzav, the belt that is around him doesn't open. In other words, nothing stands in his way. You'll see right away, more beautiful, v'lo niftach zroch na'alav, the bow of his shoes doesn't open up. No, but every so often, you ever go walking and you have to stop to tie your shoelaces if you have laces on your shoes, and you have shoes on your feet, yeah? Nothing stands in the way. In other words, there's no impediment. Neither his belt opens up,
nor his shoelaces. Asher chitzav shenunim, his arrows are sharp. The chol kashto tav deruchot, and all of his bows are tensed, ready to shoot. Susav katzar nechshavu. The shoes of his horses are like rock. The galgilav kasufa, and the wheels of the chariots move like a tempest. What a description, what a powerful description of a mighty army coming against, and nothing, no impediment, nothing stands in the way. Sho'ogalo kalavi. He cries out, he roars like the lion. Yish'ag kakvidim, he will roar like the young lion. V'in home, and he's going to moan. V'yochaz tereth, and he's going to grab his prey. V'yaflit, and he will take it to his lair. The pleitai, it's for himself. V'ein matzila, nobody can save him. V'in home alav v'yomahu k'nahamat yam. And the enemy, that enemy is going to, in a sense, make sounds of victory, Olav, against the Jewish people by Yomahu on that day, Kinahamat Yam, as the roar of the sea, the waves breaking against the shore. V'nipat la'aretz v'hinei choshech. Klal Yisrael is going to look at the earth, and you know what's there? Darkness. Sar va'or choshech ba'arifeha. Sar va'or choshech, there are two ways of learning this. We have 1 minute. There are two ways of learning this. The Mitzuda says v'hinei choshech tsar. V'hinei choshech tsar. That's not according to the Tamei HaMikra, but the Mitzuda says there is darkness from the oppressor. Yesh lo choshech mehatzar v'ha'oyev ha'bo'alav ki lo matza ezer. There's darkness from the oppressor because Israel has not found one who will come to their aid and assistance. V'or choshech ba'arifeha, and or ha'shemesh, the light has become dark in the heavens. Ba'arifeha, that the heavens have become dark. Ya'arof kamota likhi, the Ya'arof is from the heavens. The very heavens become dark. The very heavens become dark. I, how do I end a shir on such a note? Yehi Ratzon that people should say La Tov Tov, V'la Ra Ra, and Choshech is Choshech, and Or is Or, and Mar is Mar, and Matok is Matok. Yeah, that's why I tried to undo the depression.
It's like saying it today, like today.
That's what's it said. It's very sad. You're going to need a good parak coming. I'm going to have to get a good parak for you. We're going to have to read a good parak.